Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. And so if you cannot listen to this show in its entirety today, this show is rebroadcasted on Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 9 p.m. I will assert to you that you really, really need to start paying attention, because this is a very critical year. I'm starting to get some support in the sales with Reclaiming the Republic and Republic Review. And I need your attention. I need your support. I need you to start getting active and taking control of your community. And you need to start holding people accountable. I'm going to be having interviews with other candidates that had just recently lost their elections, and as to why. And some of these elections should not have been lost. Some of these elections should have been supported by leaders, but instead we have managers of agendas instead of leaders in leadership positions. This has to change. This year, this is where we change it. And so, because this is an election year, and it's an election year with big ramifications, whether it be the formal election, party elections, and so forth. And so I will just say that you need to start paying attention and getting involved. This is an educational show, and many parts of these shows refer to previous shows. Consequently, to stay abreast with my content, you need to listen to all of these shows. And I do rebroadcast, and today I will be playing the interview that I had with Dr. Vile, my first interview, back in August. And the reason being is a lot of people are, you know, starting to, you know, question, or I shouldn't say question, but they're looking at this and going, you know, they missed this interview. And it's really important that we start paying attention to these interviews. Anyway, this Friday, the Republican Coffee Club will have Carl Tompkins, and he will be talking about Business God's Way. And they meet at the Something Else Deli at 152 South Sherman. And that is on the northwest corner of Sherman and 2nd. And the admission is $5. And I think they sell pastries and so forth, and coffee. So anyway, go get informed. So I've mentioned this before, and I'm going to kind of go through a quick barrage here. Since the 90s, the medical industry was warned about the coming forth of socialized medicine. If there was an industry that could have protected us from this insidious governance, it would have been the doctors and the medical industry, but they were stifled by political correctness. All businesses today are being stifled by political correctness, and we see doctors now leaving the socialism and conscription in this medical industry as they just basically back out, retire, or what have you. And so we're going to be left with these new doctors and new services and support that are not going to be good, folks. There were enough doctors to basically give us a fighting chance, but it's not too late. And I'm trying to find out if I can get these doctors to kind of start helping support and getting more involved so that we can not only protect future businesses from being usurped, but get their businesses, or I should say, get their practices back to them. We need someone to call all to a large meeting and to lay out a plan of how to do this. And I'm just calling for anybody that's a leader in this community to step up and get involved. I personally only do business with patriots and lovers of the Constitution, and today it is getting harder in some aspects. Most companies that advertise hide behind 40-plus advertising companies right here in Spokane who convince these companies to hide behind political correctness as to not offend someone. You know, you have a right to be offended. Just remember that. My friends, to silence your voice as a business or as a person is un-American, and is exactly what the progressives want you to do. They want you to shut up. And we need everyone to help in this battle. And take it to the retailers and the services and local businesses and enlist their help. We need them to start stepping up and stepping away from political correctness. I just want to jump through this. Who is next? Who is next in the industry that is going to be taken over? They're going to come after food. They're going to come after restaurants. Those are basic needs and services. What about dental care? Transportation? Isn't that a right? They have usurped education because they want to control the curriculum. They want to control every facet of our lives, and they will be. What about homes? You know, homes is a fundamental need. They've already usurped this grandioso idea of housing and urban development. When are they going to take over all property and homes? Are you starting to see and you're starting to understand what is going on and what's at stake? If you're not getting the big picture yet, you need to, and you need to start revisiting my broadcast where I have read from founding documents, the Federalist Papers and other Madison's documents and so forth. Remember what I always say when I read one of these founding documents. I always say this: are the words in the founding documents that I am citing the words of deceit, or are they the words that we have been taught from our progressive education, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats, the words of deceit? And I will tell you it's the latter. I will tell you that our framers had such integrity, honor, and honesty that they were truly serving us and what was best for our posterity. I'm going to replay the first interview I had with Dr. Vial. I want you to pay close attention to this, folks. He does not call me out as a freak. He does not tell me I'm wrong. And as a matter of fact, he agrees with everything I say or what I assert. And nor does he tell me that what I am doing and asserting is unconstitutional. He simply does not like it. I'm telling you, the parties don't like it, because they'll lose control. The globalist corporations, they don't like it because they have great controls. Billionaires don't like it because they have plans. They have machinations and avarice in controlling every facet of our life so that they can basically maintain their position and control over us. The media doesn't like it. They're not going to give me press. And I've already said this in the past, that the day will come when they'll try to dig up and try to expose crap that is literally just manufactured, because the person that has the true threat to them, they will do anything and everything, and they will use lies and deceit. And because what they can't do is they can't attack my premise. So who and or what will they attack? They're going to attack me personally. That's exactly what they try to do. And so I may not have been a perfect person, but I was not a bad person. I've never harmed anybody. I've never committed any type of crime to that type of an extent. I had a DUI, and I've had other problems in my youthful past, but I've had a very clean slate since I joined the Marine Corps. Well, that's when I had my DUI. But anyway, long story short, folks, I don't have a lot of time. I'm just trying to tell you that even the conservative entertainers is another group that doesn't like it. Anybody that has a self-interest and does not want to see these problems solved and fixed. I will even tell you that there are, you know, big conservative organizations that are not going to like this when they realize that this is going to dismantle their control or their relevance. Because what do they have left if all of a sudden the problems go away? They will have nothing left to do. They'll have no one else to be involved in, no one else to, no one else's lives to, you know, to be divisive with and so forth. And so there is merit in really understanding this argument and this constitutional position that I've been taking. And that's why I'm going to be replaying this. I actually just put in the can a great interview with Mr. G. Edward Griffin, the guy that wrote Jekyll Island. You're going to love this. And those are forthcoming as well. I've got candidates that are going to be forthcoming as well, because they have their own story to tell regarding this past election. When we come back, it will be Dr. Vial and I talking, so please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. folks, it's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I have learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Vaughn Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money on just any good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist like Dr. Vaughn Tracy. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Vaughn Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I ask you to give Dr. Vaughn Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Thank you.
Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my Wednesday show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on KSBN from 4 to 5, then you should know that the Constitution is really a contract. Contrary to our education system, the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders possess an inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the federal government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review.
Rippey Homes isn't just about building homes. They offer leading architectural designs in business buildings and offices. The designers they work with have been able to take the cutting-edge technology and spatial comfort in the home setting and integrating that into a vast array of small businesses and professional office buildings. What is most important is how they can offer incredible savings and innovations that one would want to consider in an office building. But why wouldn't a business owner want to maximize their savings in the office space as they would with their home? In businesses today, differentiating your business in positive ways is key to attracting customers and building a successful business. So if you want to get your custom office building right, then you need to contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's cgrippey.com.
This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academ has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem.
All right, well, we're back, and we have a very special guest with us. And his name is Dr. John R. Vial, and he is a professor of political science and dean of the University of Honors College at Middle Tennessee University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I hope I got that right.
You got it, yes.
He is a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of the College of William and Mary and the University of Virginia, studying under Jefferson, I presume. And served for 25 years at MTSU's mock trial coach. He is the author and editor of approximately 40 books, some of which he has co-authored or co-edited, and a number of which are in multiple volumes and multiple editions. His primary specialties are the U.S. Constitution and its amendments, the constitutional amending process, the U.S. Constitutional Convention of 1787, and early U.S. politics. And I might actually throw another bone in here for you, Doctor, that you actually cited my material in one of your books. So
absolutely.
So anyway, let me get to the works that you've actually got, because you've got so many, and there's some for our listeners that I think are very, very relevant, because I think lots of people are starting to realize that they need to really understand the Constitution and the way Madison and the framers, Sherman specifically, I believe, was the one that really brought forth the two constituents for the bicameral Congress by doing the Connecticut Compromise. But getting somebody to understand this isn't really, it's not rocket science, it's not difficult, but understanding by reading this, the source documents, and then getting, you know, research documents such as yourself or books and materials and literature really, I think, helps kind of illuminate, because I think you've added a lot of analysis in these. And so the works that I kind of highlighted out of that plethora of material that you've produced, the Constitutional Convention of 1787, and that is a comprehensive encyclopedia of America's founding.
Yes, two volumes.
Right. And a companion to the U.S. Constitution and its amendments, which is now in its sixth edition.
Right, and that's the one, you know, for general readers. I mean, the one on the Constitutional Convention, if, you know, if you're a nerd like I am, you'd enjoy it. But the companion, I sort of try to update with most recent court decisions and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's probably one of the more accessible books.
Right. And let me ask you, going back to that first work, in the Constitutional Convention of 1787, I'm going to presume that you relied heavily on Madison's notes of the convention. What other source material?
Well, biographies, you know, have entries, of course, on each of the 39 and actually the three other people who did not sign the document.
Right.
There's a, you know, a lot of secondary works, but, you know, there's a five-volume set by Curlin and Lerner called The Founder's Constitution.
Uh-huh.
And it has a lot of original, you know, the original documents that you can go through, and then there are all kinds of volumes, as you and I have discussed, on the ratification of the Constitution.
Right, right, right.
You know, which provides some useful insight as well.
Right, but considering the convention itself was kind of close-held and secret, they didn't talk much about it. And as a matter of fact, Madison, being such a person of integrity, felt that, you know, he needed to let Washington know that he was the one that was, you know, violating the oath, and sent him the Federalist Papers and so forth.
Well, I don't think he violated the oath in taking notes. He would have violated the oath if he had released them during the convention or even after it. You know, it's something of an irony or serendipitous part of history, but Madison was actually the last of the individuals at the convention to die, and his notes of the convention were, his wife actually sold the notes to Congress, and I think they were published in about 1840. So in some ways, you know, other than those who attended the convention, we actually know more about what happened at the convention than most people in the early republic did.
Like Andrew Jackson.
That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly right. This Jackson, of course, is not elected until 1828, and so, yeah, he would not have had access to those notes.
Right, but he did serve as a congressman. I think he was a freshman congressman when Washington was retiring, and I forget which book I read it out of. But somebody made a note that he was the only one that didn't remove his hat when Washington did his march through Congress.
I didn't know that about that. About him, I knew he had served as a judge. He's actually from the district where, you know, I live in Middle Tennessee.
Right.
And the Hermitage, which is his home place, is still a remarkable, you know, president's house to visit. When we talk about civic education, one of the things I always tell people is it wasn't until my daughters got married that I realized that apparently other families go to beaches. We always went to historic sites and presidents' houses.
There you go. So let me move on. So we've also got this other volume or other book, and it's self-serving for me because this is the conventional wisdom, the alternate Article 5 mechanism for proposing amendments to the U.S. Constitution. And this is actually where you injected, I think, some of my concepts and cited my material. But this is similar to the reframers, or because I think the reframers, as we talked before, was more of some of the individuals and their ideas. And
that's right.
Okay.
The reframers, what I've tried to do is go throughout American history and see what sort of either alternate constitutions or, you know, five or six or more consequential amendments that really would have made a difference. And what's fascinating is actually my first book in 1991 was called Rewriting the Constitution, and the chronological time was a little bit shorter, but I found about 40 proposals. And when I went back several years ago to do this Reframers, I was well over 175 different people. And, you know, they range all the way from, you know, almost sort of a complete libertarian view to, you know, socialism, communism, and whatever. So there's it almost seems like it's an American thing to do to, you know, sit down with the Constitution and tinker with it or try to figure out how to make it better.
Right. When a lot of the people that I deal with, and my perspective is, I think the Constitution really stands, you know, very well on its own, and it didn't really require a lot of amendments. There are some shortcomings. And I think that some of the things that expired, like the 1808 clause, I think there's nothing wrong with expunging some of those things just so that people kind of understand, you know, in the current Constitution and then having the historical frame, because there are times and points where we've injected a necessity of doing something and then have sunsetted that.
Right.
And so I think it's important that we, you know, can look at a really historical balloon of, you know, all of the things that were in or associated to the Constitution. But what
you
is...
You know, when the Bill of...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when the Bill of Rights was discussed in the first Congress...
Yes.
There was sort of an interesting debate between Sherman and Madison.
Oh, I absolutely Madison know, yes. Right. He wanted Madison to inject wanted it into to, it, yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to put the clauses in the Constitution where they fit.
Right.
And Sherman said, well, if you do that, it'll make it look like, you know, George Washington's, he didn't use this example, but it would be like George Washington approving women's suffrage, which isn't adopted till 1919. And so Sherman prevailed, and some people think as a consequence the Bill of Rights probably has a greater place than it would if it were simply sort of buried within the document.
So I understand that, but I think that many of the amendments in the Bill of Rights would have had to have created a new article or section for that on the, literally a personal immunities and privileges, because
well, they probably would have put them in Article 1, Section 9 and 10, not 9 limits Congress and 10 limits the state.
And I would have put them into maybe Article 4 as well.
Well, you could put the Ninth and Tenth Amendment there for sure,
right?
limiting the reserve powers.
But either way, let me get back to some of your other documents or books: The Writing and Ratification of the U.S. Constitution, A Practical Virtue and in Action, and another the last volume that I've kind of highlighted, The Early Republic: Documents Decoded, and this has been republished with an updated volume. We can get more into these, but I wanted to kind of lay these out. And as you can tell, we're coming up on a hard break. So as soon as we come back, we'll kind of close up on your publications. Please stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this. Thank you very much.
I'm amazed at just how much Rippey Homes takes pride in their partnerships. From the designers they work with, the artisans they employ, and you, the homeowner, they relish in getting it right the first time. To do this, they place their focus up front on what you want and what you need and begin forming a plan like a sculptor, taking care of the intricate details to ensure it meets your expectations. Whether you need innovation in a custom home to harmonize with the environment while offering the latest in building materials and technology, Rippey Homes takes a bottom-up approach that centers around you, the customer. They know that you are the integral component in the American dream, which is how they help you build your dream. To make your dreams become reality, contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way, we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcast. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests as to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Thank you. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is the improvement of your overall health by working with a dentist like Dr. Tracy in developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program that for every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, they will give you $50 off your upcoming dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. They also have a tiered reward program. Give them a call and ask them for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com.
Okay, we're back, and our special guest today is Dr. John R. Vile, and we were just going through his publications, only a few of them. He's written over 40 and has had his hands in many as far as editing and so forth, so he's a prolific writer on the Constitution. And John, if you don't mind my calling you John, I would like to kind of lay out the reason why I selected these is I think there's lots of people, and as you know, there are two camps, and there's three, and I've written an article, and I haven't necessarily published it, but you might find some sardonic humor in the title, but it's about the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, and those are the two primary camps. And then I have this group of people that are in the un-anti-conventionites, where they haven't antied in on either side because they just don't understand what's going on. And there are there are lots of people that are just absolutely frustrated and feel the iron fist of federal tyranny and or the overreaching, or as Madison called, encroachments of the federal government and so forth. And people are going, they shouldn't be able to do these things. And so there is, again, the convention camps that are out there that want to call an Article 5 convention and get the states involved. And that's a completely constitutional process. There's some people who really hate that. And my quip to some of these camps, like the Phyllis Schlafly, you know, the Eagle Forum, you know, that,
right, Schlafly.
Schlafly, and the John Birch Society, whenever I talk to those folks and they say, we can't be doing this. And I go, well, then why don't you tell Congress to amend the Constitution and take that out? Just remove the state's ability to call for a convention. Well, there you go. Your problem will be solved. And then they kind of look at me and they go, are you kidding me? And I go, well, you can't have it both ways. Either you support the full Constitution as it is, or you have to support, you know, these people. You know, you don't have to support what they're doing, but you have to understand that it is a convention, or the word convention being process. It is a process that is viable within the Constitution for people to get in arms. Now, I don't want to get into that article, but the reason I've highlighted these books is I think these books are great reference points for people that want to understand this debate that we're having in our society now and what, you know, they can do and what they can't do. Of course, my books also do that, but I believe that's important that you don't myopically live with one author or another, that you try to, you know, diversify information and so forth. So,
well, and to go, you know, you talked about the three groups, and they're sort of the third group, maybe. You may have individuals like me, actually, who absolutely believe it's a constitutional mechanism and that there are appropriate times for its use, who may or may not think that the political winds of the moment are a good time to call a convention. And, you know, just because you favor, you know, it's like the amending, it's like the other amending process, you can favor the process and still be for or against, you know, an amendment for a balanced budget or abortion or, you know, whatever issue one would choose.
Right, right. Well, I've noticed on both sides, the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, that they take a fragment of information and they basically say, you know, Madison was completely against conventions, which is the anti-conventionite camp. And, the, you know,
he led one of them or helped lead one of them.
And I argue that the Virginia resolution and their appeal to other states was basically trying to coalesce, not a convention of authoring or an Article 5 type of convention, but my argument is that he wanted the states to step in, admonish the federal government for overreaching and encroaching upon the Bill of Rights, and basically get, you know, them to write a resolution to cease and desist so that we don't have to use, you know, any other means of taking back, you know, what we delegated to you to ensure that that was done that way. And his go ahead.
Neither Madison nor Jefferson had a lot of luck with that.
No, they didn't.
They got, you know, and I think you noted this in your little summary. And Madison, I think, more now Jefferson is or Mr. Jefferson is what I'm supposed to say from University of Virginia. Mr. Jefferson, I think, stuck sort of to the end to, you know, states doing this. Madison seems to me to be a little bit more equivocal and seems to have deferred a little bit more to the judiciary resolving these issues. But, you know, clearly the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, they were very important to the, you know, to the Democratic-Republican regime, if you want to call it that, that was, you know, brought about by the election of 1800. And it was a very prominent form of, you know, constitutional interpretation in the early republic.
Right. And Madison actually wrote a separate resolution in 1880 on the Virginia Resolution. It was, I think, Notes on the Virginia Resolution is what it's called. And
well, it can't be that date. I'm not sure what date it is.
I have the document.
1780?
No, it was 1880.
You see it in 1880.
Well, it was Notes on it. And I know the first Virginia resolution was 1798. So this
it was. Well, he does one in 1800. There's a explanation by the Virginia legislature that either wrote or helped comment on it.
So my bad.
That's
Was I saying 1880? If I was saying, I meant 1800.
No, that's,
forgive me.
That's clearly what. No, that happened.
Yeah, I sometimes get dyslexic. Anyway, in 1800, he did a follow-on, the notes on the Virginia Resolution, and the reason I'm bringing it up is he amplified his point of, you know, how he was remorseful that the other states did not step up and recognize their obligation, as he called it in the first resolution, that the states are obligated as the stakeholders of the Constitution to step in and, you know, hold. And as a matter of fact, he said this in the Federalist Papers, too, that they needed to erect barriers. They needed to create processes and conventions to be valiant in overseeing the Constitution.
To add to that, though, toward the end of his life, he became increasingly concerned about John C. Calhoun and the doctrine of nullification.
Right.
And so he actually, there were words that were actually published after he died, which were, you know, sort of his parting advice to his country that the Union be preserved. And that's why I say I think toward the end he leaned a little bit more toward judicial resolution than he did state resolutions. But, you know, certainly nothing wrong with this, you know, with a state calling attention to what it perceives to be an encroachment. But whether you would give, you know, I guess my problem would come with whether you want to give legal significance to that other than as advice to legislators or, you know, advice to those who might, you know, might be thinking of an amendment to curb federal powers within a given area.
Right. Well, anyway, folks, we could go on and on. And every time I talk to constitutionalists, this could go hours because it gets into all different little micro points in time of Madison's thoughts here, Madison's thoughts there, because he was an evolving man like we all are.
Sure.
And I know that one of the things I kind of mentioned I wanted to talk to you about was the lack of education on the Constitution, and that I just find it, you know, abhorrible that we have politicians that don't understand what the Constitution is and that they have these writing bills or they say, you know, what do you mean? Who cares about the Constitution? We can do whatever we want to do. And
that is shocking.
And when you watch TV and you see the man on the street and they ask basic civic questions, to me, it is a huge, you know, embarrassment that our education system is doing what it is. But I believe, and I know you're in the education system, so I'll try to veil this as not as a big insult, but I think this is a shining star of success. If you want to have an electorate and a populace that is completely ignorant of their civics and their government and how to be involved in it. And so that's why people just don't care anymore. And it's why there's so few people that have read the Constitution, so few people that understand or even can speak to it.
I think in education, particularly at the high school or college level that does not include civics, is really an inadequate education. And,
right.
You know, part of it is schools are called upon to do, you know, everything from driver education to sex education and, you know, all these new developments in science. And I think sometimes people are so overwhelmed. But ultimately, you know, we're producing citizens,
right.
And they do need to be educated in, you know, how the system works.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I've already read the citation from the Cod Fishery Bounties Act of 1792 when Madison kind of schooled, I think his name was Livermore, regarding, you know, using the general welfare, because hey, if the federal government could start using general welfare for things of welfare, then we could take over schools, we could take over healthcare. You know, and I'm paraphrasing, but he really he the way he frames this, he says, you know, we could unleash a very evil genie that Congress would have full discretion and full judgment over what welfare really is. As we can hear, there's the time for the break coming up, so I apologize for the interruption, Dr. Vile, but we'll be right back, folks, after we hear a few things from our sponsors. So hold tight, and we'll be right back.
This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academe has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. Rippey Homes is a family-owned business that has been building homes in the Spokane area for over a decade. For years, they've offered their customers an array of construction projects and services. But due to market demands, they now exclusively focus building high-efficiency homes and business offices, offering custom turnkey solutions for customers seeking to save money on operational costs while enjoying the latest innovations and construction technology. They understand many of these features can be expensive, but this is why they work closely with a team of leading designers to integrate the details and options that suit your needs. When it comes to translating designs into reality, the artisans they employ make this happen. If you're interested in building a cutting-edge dream home or office, then contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com.
Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention or a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, these conventions require the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is noncompliance to the Constitution, and they would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? This is the only way the states can deal with the federal government's encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers they have not been delegated. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review. And please listen to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on KSBN from 4 to 5 on Wednesdays.
Okay, we're back, and we still have Dr. Vile on the line, and I appreciate your patience in these little interruptions, but let me try to close on this constitutional education, because I think it is one of the biggest problems that we have, because when I keep on hearing people call us a democracy and they don't understand republicanism, I believe that that is a systemic problem within our culture and society. And so do you offer at Middle Tennessee University online courses like Hillsdale College for people to just get a, 101 on the Constitution?
You know, we offer a fair number of online courses, but I don't think we have that specific course. One of the things that I did, and it's a little easier to do it from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, than it is from Seattle, Washington, But I took a group of honor students over our spring break, and we went to, I think, five different presidents' houses and historic sites in Williamsburg, Richmond, and then ended up in Washington, D.C. And, you know, we had some classes, obviously, that led into that as well. And, you know, I think we it's very helpful if you can actually go to the sites where they lived, and, you know, particularly on issues that maybe sometimes are covered, you know, the slavery and rights of women and those kind of things. Sometimes it's a lot easier if you can actually go there and sort of see in person.
Right, right, right.
And I've noticed that a lot of the exhibits now, the early presidents, you know, when I was growing up, and I loved it. I mean, you'd go to the president's houses, and everything was very laudatory. And it still is for the most part, but they do, you know, almost all of them now have exhibits on slavery and sort of life of the common people during that time. And it's a great way to learn history.
Right. Well, I just want to throw it out there as a recommendation, because I believe competition is good. And
sure,
there's not a lot of competition for Hillsdale trying to teach 101 type of Constitution classes. I do believe that they're making good money on it, and it's maybe an opportunity for, you know, Middle Tennessee University.
I appreciate that, and I think that's certainly would be something, you know, certainly something that I'm interested in doing, and
right,
but there might be, it might be a market for it.
There you go. Then maybe you could afford guest speakers.
Maybe so.
Anyway, we don't have much more time left, and I know we've talked about the 17th Amendment, and really quick, in the Article 5, there is the Amendment Protection Clause at the very end that talks about you can't pass this amendment and that amendment. And
right,
what is your feeling on that portion of Article 5 that says that the states cannot lose their suffrage without their consent and the 17th Amendment?
Well, I personally don't think there's a conflict there. It's focusing specifically on the equal representation in the Senate. And, of course, even after the 17th Amendment, states retain that. What we sometimes forget, though, is that before the 17th Amendment changed officially from, you know, state legislatures choosing to the people directly choosing the Senate, between that time, there were quite a number of states, actually, that decided on their own that they were going to award the Senate seat to whoever won the popular election. So states already on their own had shown that they had a predilection for doing this. And prior to the 17th Amendment, you had a lot of cases where states just simply deadlocked and were not able to have any representation in the Senate. So if anything, 17th Amendment probably facilitated the equality pledge within Article 5.
Right, but I think it has progressed since the 17th Amendment to a point, because money is now really, you know, he who pays the piper calls the tune.
Absolutely.
And money now for a Senate race for the incumbent, they basically have a huge trough of money coming from lobbyists that are out of the states, and the states are literally they're losing their suffrage because their representation is more towards, you know, those lobbyists and those special interest groups that are buying these.
And, you know, there's a great irony here, because one of the greatest arguments actually for the adoption of the 17th Amendment was that the
Senate because of
become
that, right,
a millionaires club.
Yeah.
And it that's a problem that it did not correct. And, you know, and actually, of course, being a millionaire should not disqualify one from being in the Senate. But, you know, it certainly suggests that the people might be, you know, more attuned to the interests, as you say, of the one who's, you know, paying the piper.
Yeah, so it's probably well within reason that states should be passing laws and enacting measures to keep external money from being able to influence the elections for their Senate seats. But more importantly, when I look at that protection clause and I look at that suffrage, there were states that did not want to lose their representation. Utah was one, Maryland was another, that actually rejected that, and because of that clause, they should have been able to maintain their process of appointing. I understand that the state still had the voting capability,
right,
but Madison pointed out in the Federalist Papers, and I believe it was Federalist Paper number 10, where he talked about the two constituents, the states and the people, and I don't want to belabor the point, but
sure,
the states really lost.
I think it's Federalist 39, but I could be mistaken. That he talks there about whether it was a federal or unitary government, and he points out that, you know, in some cases they resembled sort of a national government, and in other cases including the amending process.
Yeah, so
they more closely.
Yeah, now, I'm actually speaking of 10 because he uses the words constituents, and he calls them two constituents. That the constituent for the House was the people, and the constituents for the Senate was the states. And so the states have lost that that constituency, their representation. They've lost their voice. It's kind of like in Republicanism now, counties have completely lost their representation in state legislatures because it's all done by the vote of the
They're
people.
They're not sovereign states, and states sovereign in the same way that states are. That's correct.
Okay. Well, let me get into my views of, you know, and you've read, and I understand that you don't necessarily agree with my executive summary or Republic review of auditing, having the state step in, not to amend it, but to audit it, saying, you know, we've never delegated you these powers. And so if that's something that you don't, you know, so we can cut to the chase, how would you fix or get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution?
Of course, that's a complicated question. I mean,
you got two minutes.
I mean, it is. I'm not saying that just as an out.
Yeah,
I mean, elections obviously are one mechanism. I think the problem is, I think the American people are divided. I think that you know we tend to oppose government actions except for, you know, if we're on Social Security, you know, Social Security, or if we're a vet for, you know, for vets care or whatever the different areas are. And I think we have sent, you know, going at least as far back as the Washington administration, sort of mixed signals as to how strong a national government we want. You know, obviously, you know, generally the Republican Party favors a less strong national government, and yet, you know, they have sort of their pet programs as well. So I don't know. I mean, one solution, of course, is a balanced budget amendment, and I have mixed feelings on that, but I certainly am sympathetic to the idea that, you know, one way to cut the growth of government is to tell them you either cut programs or you raise taxes, and that's something, you know, that this generation of voters can see in a way that they can't see it if you push it on down for three or four generations.
Right. So I know we really don't have enough time to explore this, so I'm just going to put it out there now. I would love to have you come back, and maybe you can ruminate on a convention and or a process or methodology of how we can, because I don't believe Madison was lying when he said we had an enumerated constitution, that the federal government was limited and defined, those powers delegated to it. And clearly there are no barriers to what the federal government can presume it can do now. And it's come in, and, you know, if you've seen what's happened here in the West, where people have died, they've killed, you know, livestock, they've just taken property from people. And so it's different in different areas, but the West, because there's so much federal property,
and
to me that's a violation of the Constitution. But it's so problematic that I'd love to have you back on, because people want solutions. They want to end this tyranny, this perceived tyranny, maybe more on this end. So I want to thank you.
One thing they say is what eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
There you go.
And that's
true.
That's a good part of it.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, and we'll definitely
have
you back. And thank you so much.
Thank you.